Reaction with Harry Broadhurst, Tony Acero, and Rick Breslin on the ProWrestling.biz radio network. You watch Raw, now react.
To the Raw Reaction. This is my super sultry voice. I'm Tony Acero, and I will be hosting this bitch until the until I see fit, to be honest with you. So, I'm looking for a co-host somewhere in the swamps of Louisiana.
Hey!
Hey! I can hear you.
What's online?
Ricky Raccoon?
What's going on?
Man, I've missed you.
I know, it's been a while since we've been on.
Yeah, a lot of minor changes have been going on. You know, with football season coming up, yours truly has been relatively busy making that happy. You know, as a bartender, my job is to get people drunk, and most people like to drink during football games. So that's coming up. We've also had Harry. Last I heard, he fell off a few stairs and is unable to join us on the podcast for roughly a month. So quite a big hole to fill, and no, that's not a fat joke. That would be mean and rude and inconsiderate.
I heard he blew up in a limo.
Is that what it is? Wow. Okay, well, because of this limo incident, I mean, I'm pretty sure he'll return, you know, after finding out that that's just a bit too much. But because of it, I've had to search high and low for a guest co-host, because 2 hours of just me talking, as entertaining as it may be, I just don't get paid enough to do that.
So who did you find for us, Tony?
Well,
the public wants to know.
I called up P. Diddy, but apparently he had shit to do tonight.
Did you call Scooby too?
No, I have no interest in Scooby being on the show. But I found the next greatest black man in the world, and his name is Greg DeMarco.
Greg. Not only am I here, I have control of the board, and that just spells disaster for anybody else. Because, you know, I believe the write-up says that Jimmy Christopher is the most valuable producer, which is almost as impressive of a credit as Facebook's Fantasy Wrestling League, like Rick gets to have. But, you know, when the producer doesn't show up, guess who gets depressed?
Shut up!
And in the first 1.5 minutes, Greg has insulted half of the cast. I love it. What's up, Greg?
I'm doing good, man. How you doing?
I love it, man. This has been planned for months, you know, and I'm not going to call it a takeover, but I do want to let everyone know that I've been trying to get Greg on the show for a very long time. Not only because of what he brings to the table, but also because there's a few projects that he's working on that I just feel need to be shed to the light of our 5 listeners.
You know, with the way Blog Talk Radio does their stats nowadays, you never know how many listeners you really have. I think they do that on purpose. I don't know. No. So does that mean you want me to tell the people what I'm doing?
Yeah, I think we would all like to know what Greg DeMarco is doing.
Well, if you've been following along on Facebook, and you can, just search for Greg DeMarco or Greg DeMarco 411. Same thing on the Twitter. And even on the Instagram, believe it or not, although I never do anything there, I've been fortunate enough to be in position to start my very own wrestling promotion titled PHX Wrestling, located right here in Phoenix, Arizona. And the first event will be less than 2 weeks away from tonight, August 19th, titled Rise at the Arizona Event Center. Of course, if you are in or around the Phoenix area and you heard that and you're like, oh, shit, I got to go to this, then log on to phxwrestling.com. Pick you up some tickets, fool, and come to the show. It's going to be bad. Like, it's going to be amazing. And I'm not just saying that because I'm the promoter. It really is going to be amazing.
I'm super excited about it. And also, to let anyone else know, just to entice you just a bit more, I will be there personally wearing a very tight T-shirt.
Believe that!
Oh, tater tots. All right, so, I mean, this is called the Raw Reaction. We are here to react to Raw. I will be your host for the foreseeable future. In all seriousness, I hope Harry feels better soon, and he will be back. In fact, I believe he's scheduled to call in next week for the, at the very least, to give us some predictions regarding SummerSlam. So I'm looking forward to that.
Tony, I got to interrupt you, Tony. You deserve a proper
shit.
Tony Massaro.
I got to be right now, cause I can't get much stronger. Man, I've been waiting all night now. That's how long I've been on ya.
Much
beautiful.
I know, it's a thing of beauty.
For those that don't know, I've been doing this podcast thing for quite some time, and I got my humble start on the Greg DeMarco show. So although I seem a bit reserved on this show, it's mainly because I'm lazy. You'll be
I was
a lot
feeling
more
that. I'm like, where's Tony? I know you just had to cover 3 hours of promo-tastic Monday Night Raw, so I'm sure that's part of it.
That is definitely part of it. And speaking of promo-tastic,
yeah.
What was that?
Well, I was just gonna say Rick Breslin, as I called you in the intro there. You don't have a theme song, do you? Like they never gave you a theme song. But I've seen pictures of you wearing like wigs and fake belts and things like that. So this is the closest thing I can come up with.
Time to get off.
All right, Tony, I'm done taking
you
it.
Know,
I don't want to
considering
style that.
Rick and I hate pants. I think that's a pretty fitting song for him. So
see?
I'll be okay with it.
I am the Raxby winner for having no pants. That's a plus.
Yeah,
see?
True story. But yeah, we were speaking about a promo-filled Raw, a promo-tastic Raw. And although Raw tonight started with a promo, we are not going to start with that promo in regards to what we're going to talk about. The first thing that I want to talk about, Seth Rollins, you know, he comes down to the ring, and he's got something to say regarding our relatively unknown man named Finn Balor. And I say unknown because we in the internet wrestling community must understand that we are, although growing, a bit of a minority in terms of who these people are coming up from NXT. So while you look at the audience and you see signs such as "Face Fuck Me Finn" and other nice remarks, then you get the idea that everybody knows who this person is.
Damn! She's got you wrapped around her little finger, Tony.
Oh, I think there's a lot of fingering going on for sure. The truth is, not a lot of people.
You're welcome.
This particular person, and even if they are aware, they're only minutely aware, relatively vaguely aware. So Seth Rollins' promo, without going into too much detail verbatim, I like to rather speak on what it did and how it did it really fucking well. Greg, I don't know if you remember, but I wasn't always a big fan of Seth Rollins in terms of promos. I thought they dragged on a very long time. I thought they were obnoxious just for being obnoxious. And I thought that by and large they didn't work, particularly when he was working under the authority. I believe one or two conversations between you and I is he's doing exactly what he needs to do. And I'm like, yeah, but it goes a little too far. Well, anyway, tonight he did exactly what he needed to do, and he did it well. It feels like they're going to go full bore with the folklore thing. And I love it. I love mythology in general. I've studied mythology in college. A lot of what Balor's talking about just resonates with me in terms of what I've learned and what I've read. And also, it really opens the door for others to. And I know that's going to sound preachy from a teacher's perspective and from an English professor's perspective, but realistically, if someone doesn't know what the hell he's talking about, chances are they're going to look it up. And if they look it up, they're opening their eyes to an entire new world that is just super awesome, that gives Finn Balor a character base and background. And Seth Rollins is still his usual sleazy, evil laugh motherfucking self. I just thought it was a great promo, a great way to continue the feud without having an actual physical interaction, and a great way to just remind you that Seth Rollins is the man.
Was that to me?
I like the way he ran down all his accomplishments, man, and you know, just boasting about himself, just to boast. But it also reminds you, because he's been on the shelf for a while, and I'm not trying to insinuate that anyone has forgotten about him, but, you know, it's good to come back and remind the people just how great he was, or how big of a deal he is made out to be. So when he comes out there and lays it all out there for you, he's the white knight that slayed the beast. He's the one that took care of John Cena. He's the one that took care of Roman Reigns. I mean, he's been the first NXT champion. He's the first unified champion. Like, he's really laying himself out to become the first universal champion. He's been a first of a lot of things. And this promo was, you know, just the way he spoke in it, the cadence and everything, it grabbed my attention and kept my attention. And while it didn't really reveal anything new, I guess, for us to expect come SummerSlam, it was still, you know, something that, like I said, grabbed my attention, and I paid attention to the whole thing. It wasn't your typical boring, you know, dragging Seth Rollins promo that we've come accustomed to. It was something that really was exciting.
Yeah, I just like the fact that he called him the Jared Leto to his Heath Ledger.
Yes.
I mean, that's just, you know, fantastic. It's funny, too, because Balor is the one whose name comes from folklore, and the whole background and how he came up with the name and everything comes from folklore. And so it's, you know, kind of a little bit of a flipping of everything around. But the great thing about all this to me is the fact that once we get past all this stuff, you're damn near guaranteed to have a fantastic match on top of all this storytelling, which is really the best of both worlds.
Yeah, I mean, you know, oftentimes when they have a match where they just know it's going to be good wrestling, they back up as far as energy in terms of storytelling. They figure, you know what, it's going to be a good-ass match, so let's just let it happen. Let's just go with it. But, you know, Rick, you said there was nothing new, and I have to slightly disagree, only because although there was nothing new in terms of Seth Rollins' character development, it goes back to what I said with regards to the audience not really knowing Finn Balor. This is the perfect introduction to his entrance that everyone's been talking about, that if you've never seen it, we're all going to say, like, it's going to give your boner a boner. Your panties are going to be wet. It's going to be nuts. Everybody's going to be like, but why? Why is it so cool? Why is it? It doesn't make any sense, you know? And I'm guaranteeing there's going to be comments from people saying, I don't get it. I don't get why he has a big-ass eye on his back. I don't get why this is supposed to be cool. He's wearing dreadlocks. I don't understand. Well, they're setting the basis for that entrance to be amazing. Now you get the backstory. Now you get what he's saying. It's an alternate persona. It's his other half. It's whatever, you know? So I'm really glad that they did it, because it means, again, it's good storytelling. And I'm going to get to that before the end of the show with regards to storytelling in terms of the draft as a whole. But this moment right now with Seth Rollins in particular, it was really well done and really strong, I think.
Yeah, I'll agree with that, too, because Finn Balor, when he first came up in NXT, all painted up like the Balor demon, I had a friend of mine who was watching it who thought it was so cool that he painted himself up as Venom, the Marvel character. And I had to debate, and I had to tell him, look, no, he's not Venom. Like, yeah, that's Venom. I'm like, no, it's Balor, like his name, Finn Balor. But he didn't know who Balor was. So we looked it up, like you were suggesting earlier, you know, people might do. And, you know, I've heard of the myth before, and, you know, I showed him.
That's Balor. That's why his name is Finn Balor. That's what he's dressed up as. It's Balor. So, yeah, it's cool that they're already putting it out there so people don't think that it's Venom when he comes out at SummerSlam all dressed up.
Yeah, and then, you know, to back that all up, you know, you get Finn Balor's promo where he's basically saying, like, not only am I not afraid of you, but it's not ignorance. It's not arrogance. It's confidence. It's irony. It's who I am. It's what I am, and I'm going to beat your ass. You know, when you have a rookie show up, and I mean rookie as far as Raw goes, you need to do something in order to have us believe that he's actually a viable threat. And one of the best ways to do that is make him look at the person he's facing and say, I'm not afraid of you. I mean, it's the most basic of storytelling, but it works, and it's working. And, I mean, you can even go over to the Blue Brand and see a similar storyline going with Dolph and Dean. Now, this isn't, you know, SmackDown reaction, so we can't talk about that in terms of, you know, whether they're doing a good job or not. But the basis is still there. You know, you got someone that people don't believe in, whether they because they've seen him fall many times or because they just don't know him. And you got a person who has gone through a lot and has been exposed as a really, really good wrestler. So you have to do some building. And I think they did a really good job tonight. You know, speaking of building things, it looks like the tag team division is getting a couple of more teams in terms of, you know, the old, you know, the old classic of two members that don't get along or two members you've never seen together or people that you would randomly put together on WWE 2K17 because you're bored. Tonight we saw two teams go together that haven't previously teamed up, at least as far as, like, this is an actual team, in Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens. And you also saw Sin Cara and Neville team up together. On paper, you can see a lot of parallels. Jericho and Owens are Canadian, and they're heels, and they're big mouths, and whatever. Neville and Sin Cara are high flyers, and, well, that's about all I got. But seeing these two teams added to the – I saw on Raw tonight a lot of tag team mentions. You had New Day and Anderson and Gallows. You had the two new teams that I just mentioned. You had the opening promo that kind of hinted towards a tag team match at SummerSlam, which was then accepted. So I'm never going to be the person that says tag team wrestling is back, ever, because I don't think it's ever left. I think that it gets highlighted. I think that it oftentimes doesn't get highlighted, but it's never left. It's just one of those things that people like to throw out and complain about. And I know, Greg, you can back me up as far as complainers. You're always going to have them. They're always going to be there. So with regards to Jericho and Owens, yeah.
I mean, they're just there everywhere because wrestling fans, by and large, will tune into the product looking for what they can hate, looking for what they can complain about, but basically expecting to be let down. And if you expect to be let down, what's probably going to happen? You're probably going to be let down. And so that's why people will complain. But if you flip it around, watch with the intention of being entertained, you'll probably realize that it's a very entertaining product. And the mid-card of Raw is highly entertaining right now.
Yeah.
Including the tag team division.
It's why most wrestling fans are single. You know, you go in a relationship waiting to fuck it up. But in terms of love of the product, you know, tag, like Owens and Jericho. Okay, you know, you notice that they're giving them a lot of freedom on the mic where they ad lib, and oftentimes it works. Sometimes it falls a little flat, but I mean that's the nature of the beast in terms of ad libbing and improv. Jericho and Owens are really good at it. So tonight I saw. Oh, Greg, I don't know if you've been listening. Probably not, but I love Enzo. I think every single thing he says is the best thing that's ever been said on the microphone. Anything. Everything. I've signed on for it. I mean, if I were to say, if I had a dime for every time I said I hated Enzo, I'd have zero dimes. Because
zero dimes. I need to get you a zero dimes soundbite for the show.
Yes.
But because it was
even
so, perfect.
So I can say that tonight the promo was a little off, and it was a little long-winded, and it kind of went on a little bit longer than it should have. But still, what you're seeing is you're seeing Jericho and Owens, who their partnership, I mean, at one point I'm like, well, what's the explanation here? But then I realize it's Kevin fucking Owens. He's like, because I feel like it.
Yeah.
You know, at any given moment, he could turn on Jericho. But let me ask you guys, you know, Greg first, what do you think of the two new teams that we saw tonight? Do you think that they're going to last long, each one of them, and do you think that they're going to bring anything to the table as far as tag team goes?
Their teams of convenience, and that's what the WWE likes to do. They love to put out their teams of convenience. Do they last long? That's really based on necessity. I mean, the actual division is being anchored by New Day, and then, of course, Gallows and Anderson, as you have right now. I would honestly – I mean, it's been a while, and if my longtime co-host Patrick O'Dowd were here, he'd bring up the cycle of tag team wrestling, and he'd probably say, you know, it's been so long that it's about time for a super team to hold some tag team gold, which Owens and Jericho would definitely classify as. And then, of course, you know, it would break down, and they would feud and everything. But Neville and Kalisto, I mean, that could actually – I could see them staying together for longer, just depending on whatever the date is for the cruiserweight division. Because, you know, that definitely makes sense to me. Now, was it Kalisto or Sin Cara? Did I get that wrong? I'm confusing
Cara,
myself.
Yeah.
Honestly,
I tied Sin Cara like four times tonight, so you're fine.
It's just, I mean, because you expect Kalisto to be on Raw, where the cruiserweight division is going to live. But, you know, logic.
All of us Mexicans look the same under a mask. So,
isn't that why you wear masks? I mean, isn't that the, you know, which I can say because I'm not booking any masked wrestlers because, you know, I'm only a show close to Mexico and book no masked wrestler because I'm smart.
Right,
because
you book one, you're going to have 800 knocking at your door.
I already have 800 knocking at my door.
Son of a bitch.
There's a lot of bad luck out there, too. So it's just,
Rick,
yeah,
what do you think? Do you think you're going to get think we're going to see these teams last long? And if so, do you feel like a lot of other people that I've seen tonight say that they're wasting Owens with Jericho or that they're wasting Neville with Sin Cara?
I mean, I think Sin Cara is just wasted just to be being there. I've questioned what's the point of a Sin Cara sometimes. No, Sin Cara was kind of a letdown, you know. He was a surprise partner for Neville, which, you know, anytime they do anything that's a surprise, you know, you're kind of waiting for that entrance music to hit and who's going to come out. And for it to be Sin Cara, it was just kind of like, womp, womp, womp. Like, wow, Sin Cara, great. You know, that was a kind of a moment where I wish Kalisto was on the Raw brand because, you know, his stock is just – a little bit higher than Sin Cara's, to where if he came out as Neville's partner, it would have been at least a little bit more exciting. But just to see Sin Cara, who hasn't been relevant in, you know, the last time we saw him, he was like the Marty Jannetty of the Lucha Dragons. I don't know. That was just a big letdown, and I wasn't really excited to see him in there. And then he went ahead and botched a move in the match, which everybody makes fun of him for in the first place, and it's not even the same Sin Cara that's known for botching, but still.
It's the same mask, though, and it's the mask that
same,
botches.
Yeah.
We all know
I think
that.
Yeah,
so,
that's
yeah.
what it is. Well, I feel like it's on the rundown of the match itself. Like, at this point, you botch. Like, that's just part of it.
Now, as for your other question, Jericho and Owens, I honestly don't see him lasting after SummerSlam. I don't see him beating Enzo and Cass just because Enzo and Cass is an established team. And I have next week we'll give our official predictions, but I have Enzo and Cass winning that match. And if that happens, you know, with Kevin Owens' gimmick and personality, you know, he'll probably blame Jericho or vice versa. Jericho is likely to blame Owens on, losing that match, and that right there is going to be the catalyst to break them apart.
Well, and to clarify,
yeah.
That was Rick's unofficial prediction, since, as you guys said, the official predictions will be next week. But you're exactly – I mean, to me, unless they go the super team route with Jericho and Owens and have them hold the belts, which I don't see them doing, although the feud between those two and the New Day would be downright amazing, in my opinion – I think you're exactly right. Like, the catalyst would be there for a feud, and it could be short-lived, and then we're kind of due for a Jericho disappearance sometime soon now.
Yeah.
So Owen sending him away is a very easy way to accomplish that.
Yeah, and Owen seems like the type of wrestler that Jericho would say, I want to work with him. And
yep.
This is, you know. Yeah. So before we move on, I wanted to talk about a little segment that had something to do with a tag team as well. That caught me off guard, but made me laugh my ass off. Dr. Anderson and Dr. Gallows have a little video of them talking about Big E's balls, basically, and how he suffered from, what was it, ring postitis? And this is, I believe, what everyone was talking about when they told me Anderson and Gallows just need to be themselves or just need to have a little bit of an opportunity. I didn't know who they were in terms of Japan and what they did over there. But when you started seeing little things like, you know, my hot Asian wife and little comments that they made, you started to realize there's a bit of a personality underneath both of their club demeanors. And this is exactly what they needed an opportunity to do. Because once they did it, you were just like, this is gold. It's so simple. It's so juvenile, but it worked.
Especially when it made Gallows a bit testy.
Yes, yes. And it's interesting how seeing both of them together bald kind of look like balls.
They do. And they could, if they weren't so PG, they could bust out the old Balls Mahoney AC/DC Big Balls theme song. And but of course they won't do that because, well, it's the WWE and I don't know. They probably do things right now because they want Trump to win the election because Vince is stupid. But you know, and that's the most I really care about politics. But the thing about the Anderson thing is hilarious because he actually used to catch shit backstage for always talking about his hot Asian wife, and so for him to kind of own that and put it in there is fantastic. I just, you know, the bar has been set so low for those two in terms of personality that they could have done anything and it gone over well. But they're truly talented, and I'm glad they're getting this because they were really just AJ's flunkies from the start. And even that kind of dragged out in the ways that it shouldn't have. So good for them for being able to show some personality and probably winning the tag team championships.
Yeah. All right. Well, Greg, do we have a caller?
Since the producer didn't show up, the fill-in producer will go old school and actually call out to the guests. So, if you guys are okay, I'm going to step away for a minute and make it happen.
Yeah, I'm just going to introduce it. You know, Rick, on our show, we basically just do the reaction, and any caller that we may have is just a friend of the show that really just wants to talk about specific parts of Raw. You know, and they all get their time to shine, and we have some special characters that we allow every week on. But we don't ever do interviews. Because it doesn't really have anything to do with Raw Reaction. But since Greg is on, and since we've got a wrestling promotion coming up, and because she's pretty damn hot, I allowed Greg to bring a wrestler by the name of Christy Janes on, and I'm actually going to ask a couple of questions that I'm interested in, and as well as talk about Phoenix Wrestling. So it's going to be short-lived, and I'll probably ask her what she thought about Raw as well if she watched it, and we'll just go from there. Rick, are you okay with that?
I'm okay, but I'm disappointed that you purposely did not say the word however in that long introduction.
Oh, I'm sure the howevers will come. I'm surprised he hasn't found. Then again, Greg's running the board, so he may be ignoring every phone call purposefully. Yeah, I feel like, ever since the draft happened, we haven't really been able to have a show. So I think people really haven't gotten our thoughts on the Raw-only, you know, feel of Raw. Do you think that it's been better or worse, or you're still not able to tell?
I mean, I think the first two Raws right after the draft were a lot better. Tonight's Raw kind of didn't live up to the first two. And I don't know if that's because of the draft that made the first two better. Because, I mean, Raws, I mean, even before the draft, you'd have good ones, you had bad ones. So it's kind of too early to tell if it was just, you know, on an upturn for a little while, or if it's going to stay on that upturn. So
I guess we'll have to wait it out a little bit longer to see if the draft is actually helping the overall product.
Yeah. I kind of liked it. I don't know if it's because I, you know, I kind of set myself up to like it, but yeah, I agree with you. Tonight was kind of a little dip in the otherwise rising quality of Raw, but even so, it went a particular direction, and I think I like the direction that it's going. You know, I'll talk more about it at the end of the show when I do my little segment, but by and large, I don't know. I feel like, I mean, you know, it's one of those shit or get off the pot things, and I feel like they're actually taking a shit, which probably isn't the best metaphor, but but I'm pretty sure you get my drift.
Mm-hmm. I gotta say, the SmackDown has been a lot better. I mean, that was
Loving. Yeah, I don't know what it is. I feel like they stripped the show of unnecessary stuff and just said, here you go, and it's great. And I mean, JBL, I can actually tolerate him right now, you know. Just, you know, one of the biggest things that I've had complaints about for years has been the commentary. And, you know, thanks sweet baby Jesus, aka Shawn Michaels, they changed that up, and it's been for the better on both sides. I don't know where Greg is. Yeah. So how long is the trip to Phoenix from you?
From me?
Yeah.
I don't know. Pretty dang long. Close enough for me to take a trip out there in 2 weeks.
Yeah, no. No. But I'm pretty sure, I mean, they're going to have a few more shows.
Unless Greg has to fly me out. Maybe I can ask him to fly me out.
I think you don't. Uh-huh. I think you can only get flown out if you're an actual personality. Well, I think you can do, but
so I'm back.
Hello, Greg.
So here's the cool thing. Do you guys? You guys don't really usually have guests. I haven't played this in like 6 months, but this is the official. We have a guest music.
It's time.
This stuff gives me the itch, Tony. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, nice.
little bit.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
So we have Christy here.
You got to introduce the woman, Tony. You got
to
give her the proper introduction. Maybe toss out the PHX wrestling. I mean, it's you know, I know you're tired after covering Raw.
I thought the it time would suffice, but apparently not. Okay, listeners, this lovely lady that I've been staring at for far too long. Her name is Christy James, and she is going to be at Phoenix Wrestling. That's what we're going with, right? Because I'm not going to call it PHX Wrestling.
You actually kind of have to call it PHX Wrestling. Right. Phoenix Wrestling is not.
It's PHX?
It is PHX.
I'm going to call it PHX because I'm never going to call it Phoenix Wrestling. That's just stupid. Anyway, she will be at the Arizona Event Center in Mesa, Arizona on August 19th. But tonight, she's with us at the Raw Reaction. Christy?
Hi.
Hey, what's up?
Nothing much. Just hanging out by the pool, talking to you guys.
Wow, by the pool. Okay, way to set the stage. Way to set the tone. Okay. you know, you're pretty new to our listeners, as in this is the first time they've ever heard you, like ever. Also, the first time I've ever heard you, but we're going to fix that. We're going to speak a lot more in the future, I'm sure. And I'm pretty sure by the end of this phone call, a lot of people are going to want to know who you are. So before we get to that point, you're a wrestler. You're a female. The world is changing for female wrestling. I want to know what inspired you to train and become a professional wrestler.
Well, just like most kids, you watch it on TV, and you always say, wow, I want to do that when I grow up. And I said, wow, I want to do that when I grow up. And I grew up, and I didn't do that. I went to college, and then I said, wow, I'm going to do this. Then one day, I just got a wild hair and just started Googling around to see where some training centers were. I didn't have a lot of money, so I wasn't going to go to some of these schools that are, you know, a couple thousand dollars. So I kind of found one in the backyard of Austin, Texas, and the trainer is actually phenomenal. So I showed up at 11 o'clock at night after one of their training sessions were done, and I went to my first one, and I sat there, and I was like, ah, man, that was so painful. And then I went back the next day and did it all over again, and now I'm into it, like, fully invested and committed, and I get hurt all the time, and I'm like, ooh, let's go do that again. So that's kind of what happened.
Yeah, you know, college does things to people. Sometimes it makes them want to go get beat up.
Yeah, it does. It does that to you.
Yeah. So you said you had an awesome trainer. What makes him awesome, aside from, you know, training you?
He does a lot of American Lucha style. So all I ever knew when I was younger and, you know, from watching, like, WWE and, like, NWA and all those other different wrestling shows was, you know, the American pro wrestling. I didn't know there was this whole other side to wrestling, which is Lucha style, you know. And so when I went in and met him, he was an old luchador from Mexico. And he was really nice until I got in the ring and I became one of his trainees. And he was really strict and really mean, but it just kind of, it was exactly what I needed. And I love that he taught us styles of wrestling. So.
Nice. Yeah, you know, really strict and really mean is something that you hear from some of, you know, the best trainers. So it's probably a good thing. You know, you said earlier you trained in Texas, and Texas is huge, like super huge. Like, you can make dick jokes about how huge Texas is. Has that helped your career? I mean, considering you're just starting and like, it's Texas, you know? Like, you throw a boot and there's a wrestling federation for it.
Yeah, well, I have recently noticed that in a lot of workers that have been in the indie scene for many years have told me that, you know, the Texas indie has just recently in the last couple of years started to blow up. And I've been very fortunate that I got in as soon as it did start to expand. And it's really nice because it is so big. There are a lot of promotions here, really great promotions. And it is so close to Mexico that we do get a lot of promoters from Mexico coming into Texas and looking for new talent. So it definitely helped pull me into another country to be able to wrestle down there too.
Nice. And I mean, with that comes a bunch of experience. You know, you recently shared a picture on social media with the person who gave you your finisher. I want you to tell me what that finisher is and what does it mean to you to have it?
So I started going to Mexico back in May, maybe a little earlier than that. And I remember when I went down there, I'm from Brazil. Not a lot of people know this, so I speak Portuguese fluently.
Mm-hmm.
However, Spanish and Portuguese are similar, but they're very different. So I can understand what they're saying, but they can't understand anything I say. So when I went down there, I wasn't really able to communicate with a lot of the female wrestlers down there. So we all know wrestling is one giant clique. So it was very hard to fit in. And this girl, Tsunami is her name, she does hardcore lucha. She kind of helped me out. She took me under her wing. She asked me what my finisher was or what I was using at the time, and I told her, you know, just like a regular DDT, and she was like, no, you're Christy James. You know, you're fun. You know, you're nerdy. You need something bigger, better. So she taught me, I call it the tsunami drop. I have also heard it called the Taliban backpack. So I was using it a lot in Mexico. I'd go down there for a couple of days at a time, like every 2-3 weeks. And so I'd use it in my matches down there, but I never felt comfortable enough bringing it to America until just recently when I had the Queen of Queens tournament at IHWE in Crawley, Texas. So I decided to pull it out and use it, and I won, and it was fantastic, and everyone has loved it since I've done it, so I definitely pulled it out at the right time. So, yeah, it was great, and I was just so happy that there was someone out there that saw something in me or enough in me to help me out in my wrestling career. So I thank you so much, Tsunami. She listens to a whole bunch of podcasts all over the world, so I'm pretty sure she will hear yours too.
Yeah, and for those that want to see the Tsunami drop, I'm not going to tell you what it is because I've seen it and it's harsh. It's amazing. But I can tell you where you can see it, and that's PHX Wrestling. Now, before we do PHX, because, you know, I don't know if you're aware, but the boss is listening. What do you see as far as your long-term future in wrestling?
At PHX Wrestling or anywhere?
Well, in terms of your, you know, I mean, of course you may want to give a little rub to the PHX Wrestling because Greg's listening, but just in terms of what you're looking for in the future of where you want to go, what do you want to do, and you know, what do you want to be known as?
I, you know, just like any female wrestler, I want to be known as someone that has mastered the art of professional wrestling, and I definitely want to be respected as a wrestler and not just looked at as a pretty face. I want to travel outside America. I'd love to go to Stardom. I'd love to go to the UK. There's a bunch of promotions I would just love to go and be part of. I would love to do Lucha Underground. It would be an absolute honor. I'd love to go and be part of AAA. I'm all about seeing and trying new things and about new experiences in my life, and I think it's very empowering the way that women in this business have kind of taken a stance for themselves and said, hey, you know what, I'm pretty, but I'm just as good as these boys are. I have mastered this craft as well as they have. Like, I do realize right now I'm very young in this business and just starting out. However, I hope that one day I can get to that level where people will look at me and they will say, oh, my gosh, it's Christy James. I am so honored to work with you. So one day that'll happen.
Yeah. Well, you know, having been in the indie scene for a long time, you know, at least in the backstage area, personally, I've seen a lot of wrestlers both come and go and also stay. But that's kind of their downfall, that they stay. So just hearing that you want to go everywhere, including outside of the United States, is really, really a testament to what you want to do and where you want to be. But in terms of your most recent event that's coming up, PHX Wrestling is presenting Rise on August 19th at the Arizona Event Center in Mesa, Arizona. And, you know, everyone in or around Phoenix should go, not just to see me, not just to see Greg, but also to see the talent, which is you, okay? And they need to pick their tickets up right now at phxwrestling.com. So you're obviously on the card.
Yeah, but it's not just about being me. I mean, there are other wonderful females that are going to be there, and not just females. There's wonderful guys that'll be there too. I'm not quite sure who what the matches are exactly going to be, and I have no idea who I'll be facing, so I'm kind of excited, but I do know that there are going to be some incredible female wrestlers there that I have even watched and have wanted to wrestle for a very long time. So they should definitely come out. They should definitely come and support women's wrestling. People, you know, all around the world watch WWE, Lucha Underground, AAA, Stardom. But if you can support those guys, you should definitely be supporting your local indies promotions, because that's where all these great big stars come from. They come from there. So please come out, come see us.
Yeah, you know, I'm not gonna lie, I've seen the card, or at least what's being presented, and it's stacked. I'm really excited to be there. I'm pumped. I'm driving roughly 6 to 7 hours just to watch, not even to be in the ring. I'm just gonna be there. You know, and since you're going to be there and you are going to be in action, do you have a message for any of the other women on the card?
I do. I just want them to know that I have been studying their matches, a lot of them, because there are quite a few girls that will be there. Like I said, I'm not quite sure who I'll be going up against, but I have studied their moves. And I'm ready for them. I am ready for the fight, and I hope I come out victorious.
Nice. All right, well, I have one last question, and it's actually not for you. I wanted to ask Greg something. Don't worry, it pertains to you. So, Greg.
Yes.
You've been in this business for a long time. You have a lot of connections, a lot. You have all the talent in the Southwest within driving distance at your disposal. Tell me why you booked Christy James.
Oh, that's a good one. Well, there's a couple different reasons and many different layers. Number one, one of the things, and Christy kind of talked about it, is that in PHX Wrestling, it's very important to me that the women are showcased. And in so many wrestling events, women are in a match, usually before intermission, usually the first half of the show. And of course, now it's starting to break through. Women are main eventing. Women are being involved in more than one match. And it was really important to me that we had more than one match involving women in PHX Wrestling, especially on the first show. The big challenge there for me was also to bring in talent that the Arizona fans are not necessarily used to. There's some great talent in the state of Arizona, but there's a lot of great talent outside of the state of Arizona too. So then it became where do I want to look to, and knowing the different areas that we were pursuing, Austin, Texas being one of them, Christy James immediately stood out. And she won't tell you this simply because she, like a lot of the other women that are in that same area, but, you know, when you're in a position to make a decision like I am, I had to pick who I thought stood out the most, and that was Christy James. So bringing out Christy James was very easy decision for me to make. You know, she talked about not being just a pretty face, but she does have the look that I think a lot of fans are going to like, and she does have the ability that a lot of fans are going to get into when they see her competing in the ring, because the look only gets you into the ring with your entrance. Then you've got to deliver, and she's going to do both, and that's what's really important to me, because, you know, that's where people are going to, you know, buy her merchandise and come back to see her again in the future. Is all because of what she can do in the ring and the total package she puts together. So when you look at all that criteria, it's kind of a no-brainer, and I think everybody will see that on August 19th.
Well, that's a good enough answer for me. All right, Christy, well, before I let you go, I just wanted to ask you to let me know where everyone can find you on social media.
So on social media, you can find me on Facebook at Christy James. It's C-H-R-I-S-T-I, not your typical spelling, or at Christy James at Twitter. And then on Instagram, it's Christy _ James. Pretty easy.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Some people don't follow that same adage. Okay. So before I let you go, I do have one last question. I wrote it down here. I didn't see it till the very end. I want to know about this whole prom picture with fans. What is this?
So I'm kind of a dork, but I never went to prom, my own prom. And just because, like I said, I was a dork. So no one ever asked me. So I just take prom pictures with everyone I meet, and, you know, like, it's just the thing I do when my fans have all started doing it. And so it really just started when me and the fan were talking about his prom, and he was saying how his prom was that night and he didn't go because his date stood him up. So I was like, you know, I never went to my prom either. You want to take a prom picture? He's all, sure. So we did a prom pose, and it's just kind of caught on. So now I prom pose with everyone. So, yeah, send me your best prom poses, hashtag prom pose.
Listeners, if you didn't get a chance to go to your high school prom, go to PHX Wrestling on August 19th and get yourself a prom picture. You can see Christy James in action, along with Lucha Underground's Willie Mack, local stars Alexander Hammerstone, the Hawaiian Lion, and the Keepers of the Faith, out-of-towners like Ricky Stark, Jack Jameson, the Whirlwind Gentleman, Funny Bone, Sage Sin, Brittany Wonder, and so many more, plus everyone that I just said, but especially Christy James, when PHX Wrestling presents Rise on August 19th. Visit phxwrestling.com for details. Christy, thank you so much for joining us on the Raw Reaction. Honestly, to be honest, you are our first interview on this podcast that's been going on for over 2 years. We typically stick to just doing the Raw Reaction. So it is it's a treat for us, as well as I hope it was for you. Best of luck in Phoenix and everywhere else, and let's do this again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much. Thank you to all my fans. Thank you, PHX Wrestling. I love you guys. Good night.
See you in a couple weeks.
There you go. Tony carrying the interview. You know, that's impressive. Good job, Tony. And Tony's interviewed before, but, you know, Tony, there was no federal bailout there for Tony on this interview. So it was all Tony, man, all Tony all the time.
Yeah, well, some people love it. Most people do. I can't think of one person that doesn't. But
no one who's smart.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that was fun. It was fun, and I'm glad that we were able to do that. Realistically speaking, I want everyone to just, like, at the very least, check out the site, phxwrestling.com. I am a supporter of it, and that's pretty much that. I mean, if my word is good enough for you guys, then that's really all I have to say. So back to Raw. Rick, how you doing, man?
Yeah. I'm doing good. I thought you were going to ask Christy James some Raw questions, man.
Well, I considered it, but I figured if she's outside by the pool, she may not have caught all of it. So,
very observant. Very observant.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, so Raw, one of the big programs that we've been pushing forward on Raw has been the cross-promotional Brock Lesnar versus Randy Orton match that's coming for SummerSlam. And what I've seen a lot of, which makes me roll my eyes incessantly, is the whole 2 weeks after the draft and they fuck it up, you know, 1 week after the draft and, you know, Orton showing up on Raw. Guys, shut up, okay? Just stop. I'm not going to even give you a reason why. I just want you to stop. Pretend that you are a puppy and I'm hitting you with a newspaper. Just stop.
Hang on, wait, Tony, I got your back. I just gotta get to it, you know, because there's too many freaking sound bites.
Would you shut the hell up?
There you go. See, that's all you gotta tell him.
Shut up!
I knew it was coming.
Of course, you can't have one without the other. I mean, that's just how these things work. The Jericho sound bites in here like four different times. I don't understand.
Yeah.
Who set this thing up? Oh, wait. That was...
you.
That was me. Yeah, it was me. Hey,
yeah,
so, I'm Belong.
And I love you, Greg.
On the format, I believe I put OMG, OVW, RKO, LOL, BRB. Acronyms galore. But what I'm pertaining to is the fact that the Brock Lesnar versus Randy Orton program took a little bit of a change tonight. Whereas it was a cross-promotional match that was, you know, never been done before on pay-per-view. Tonight, they did a whole new fold. And now this match is suddenly 15 years in the making. It wasn't last week, but it is tonight, all right? So, silly booking ideas aside, the idea that they presented tonight was one that looked into the history of these guys. And this is why I loved it. You had Randy Orton do a sit-down interview talking about how he and Brock Lesnar came up at the same time, won titles around the same time. Each one of them shared the moniker, youngest WWE champion, at different times, obviously. They didn't mention that exactly, but they kind of threw a nod towards it. and just Orton was just all around like, you know, I thought we were cool, and then I kind of didn't like the fact that he left. He went the John Cena route of, you know, I've always been here, and, you know, Brock left for greener pastures. That was all fine. I didn't mind it. But then you were taken to Brock Lesnar, and this is where it got good. Brock Lesnar was sitting down in a chair saying, I was never his friend. He's nothing to me. He's insignificant. He doesn't matter. It was beautiful. It's like you got Orton saying, yeah, we came up at the same time. You know, we have similar stories. Somewhere along the line, it switched. And Brock's like, we never had the same story, kid. You're nothing to me. I have been the shit since birth. I've been doing this since 5, I think he said. So it was really cool because two things happened here. Brock was the arrogant heel because up until this point, you don't know what the hell Brock is. And Orton, although somewhat naive in terms of their friendship, he still was not to be taken lightly because he said, I think Brock is underestimating me. And those two just going back and forth, this is what I wanted to get to at the end of the show with regards to the storytelling being way different since the draft. Whether it's because they're not so exhausted on so many characters, they're able to spend time with less people, or they're just more excited about Orton versus Brock. But it's these little things, these little snippets of dialogue that really put you into the story. And those people that don't notice it right now will notice it in a couple of weeks when they see their favorite wrestler or their least favorite wrestler actually have a personality. And again, I'll get to it at the end of the show, but that's just another example tonight of seeing two wrestlers who you know, you're well aware of, but they're focused. They're focused on one story to be told, and that is Brock Lesnar versus Randy Orton. So I just wanted to get your guys' take on the promos, and if you like the fact that there was no actual physical contact this week, take out the fact that you knew Brock wasn't going to be there, that you know Orton's not going to be there. Just in general, like, is that what you were looking forward to, or did you think that this was a good enough method to move the story forward?
You know, for me, they couldn't. They did the physical confrontation last week, so they really couldn't go that way again because how many times can Orton sneak into Raw? How many times can Lesnar sneak into SmackDown? But it's a reminder, first of all, for everybody to remember, because I guess a reminder means you remember, this is a TV show, and TV shows have elements other than live in-ring professional wrestling. It's something that's very important for fans and you know, viewers alike to not ever forget when they're watching the WWE. And the video package is something that the WWE still does better than anybody. And that's something that they did here tonight. Years ago, I would attend Monday Night Raw, and I actually attended a Raw in Richmond, Virginia, where I grew up. And the dark match before Raw was Brock Lesnar versus Randy Orton. And for a fan in the audience, it was, who's this guy versus who's this guy? No one knew who the hell they were. But that was a match that worked as a dark match. And Lesnar went over. I don't know if it's a precursor to what's going to happen 15 years later. But it was, you know, they probably did it several other times in several other places. But I watched these two go at it and saw that, you know, you could tell that these guys were going to be, you know, have a huge future. Who knew that Lesnar was going to go on to be Lesnar or Orton was going to go on to be Orton? You didn't know, but you knew these guys had the look and they looked like they belonged and you knew it was going to last. But they, you know, that history really is there. Lesnar turning around and no-selling it is absolute perfect Lesnar. That just made me so happy. When Lesnar's that's Lesnar's character, which is Lesnar turned to 20 to perfection, and I loved every second of it because you get the Orton thing, being Orton and taking it seriously, and they just got Lesnar sitting there. I never liked him. I was never friends with him. We were never, and it just is so Brock Lesnar.
Yeah. People forget, well, not forget, but people don't realize that Brock can talk. He's put with Paul Heyman, who does all the talking for Brock Lesnar, because Paul is the mastermind at the promo. And Brock is a man of few words, but when he does talk, it is hilarious. Just the way he nonchalantly just goes about saying he's going to kill someone, basically, with no emotion. Like it's not a big deal to him. Like, Randy Orton, who's that? He gets in the ring with me, and there'll be piss, sweat, and blood in that ring, and it'll all be Orton. Like, I love Brock Lesnar's promos. I almost like them more than Paul Heyman's, just because they make me laugh that much harder. Just to see the way Brock goes about saying how he'll destroy an opponent, it's highly entertaining to hear this man just say he's going to kill someone and just like that.
Yeah, you know, I nearly forgot that Randy Orton had that huge head of hair, like that mop that we saw in the little clip. Yeah, so I mean, I'm looking forward to the program, and I can't see anyone that isn't looking forward to it. Again, this goes back to building up your opponent, where Brock Lesnar is so high up, he's so untouchable, that, you know, the RKO on Monday almost had to happen. And this has nothing to do with the draft. This has nothing to do with, you know, oh, how did he get there? But you know what they're doing is they're actually using that as a storytelling device. It was a little rushed at the end of Raw tonight for whatever reason, but even that element was there with Bryan's little jabs and straight up saying Cesaro was being underutilized. They're using this whole, I'm sorry Brock showed up and I'm sorry Orton showed up, as a way to advance storylines that they're probably not even sure are going to happen yet, or are unaware of what's going to happen, because that's how short-sighted their writing team has been. But it's one of those things where, I mean, you know, they're using stuff for other pieces in their show. That is the telling of good long-term television. Again, I'll get to it later, but that's just, I wanted to applaud them for that. Now's the time of the show where I'm just going to go, you know, I believe Greg used to call it a quick hit. but we're going to just run through a few things that happened on Raw. Yeah. Because, you know, for the sake of, well, first of all, some of the shit doesn't even matter. Like a squash match, which is super awesome, but doesn't matter. but a lot of other things that, you know, we do need to pay a little bit of attention to before we get to the big idea. So,
But can I do it, Tony? Can I do it?
Yeah, I think you should do it.
Bang, 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 bang. Try and stop it. Bang, bang. Here I come. Bang. Bang.
I'm so happy.
Tonight we saw Braun backwards choke slam another jobber into oblivion, and it continues to be just something beautiful. Who do you think they're going to bring up to eventually stop the barrage of jobber, you know, failure?
I kind of worry that might be someone who's already there, you know, and it could very well be like a Cesaro. It could be almost – I kind of hope it's a Cesaro, but as long as it's not Big Show. Or what brand's Big Show on? I don't even – I was going to say I don't know. I don't care. One of those guys, Big Show or Kane, whatever. I think Big Show's on Raw.
I think Big Show's in ECW.
Well, he's too busy training for his – amazing WrestleMania showdown with Shaquille O'Neal. So it's, you know, because that needs to happen, because we didn't get enough of that last year at WrestleMania. So
exactly why he needs to come beat Braun Strowman, so he can prove that he'll be able to beat Shaq at WrestleMania.
You know what I'd rather have? I would honestly rather have them put, you know, Shaq and the Big Show in the ring at WrestleMania and then just go ahead and cart out you know, Braun Strowman will let him beat the crap out of both of them right there at WrestleMania. That's what they should do. That's how you get
beautiful
Braun Strowman over. But they won't do that.
Right. And it looks like Roman's trip to the mid-card is officially solidified by way of icing. he interrupted a reenactment of a wedding tonight, and it was Lana and Rusev. They had their own. She wanted to repeat her vows for the crowd, and Reigns came down. And although it's somewhat funny, it just continues to boggle me that even in the mid card, they book Reigns like a heel, and expect him to be cheered for like a face. And
oh man! And it was the return of whole Rico Suave Reigns, the one that nobody likes, man. I hate when he comes out here with that. Roman Reigns has two characters, basically. One that he can actually build a company around, and that's it, and actually make him likable, and that's his badass, like, I'm not going to take your shit, I'm just going to run through you and fight the good fight, Roman Reigns. And then there's the I'm so cool for school, cocky, I'm going to try to make these jokes suave, Roman Reigns. And that's the one that nobody likes. And they try to book him as a face, but they bring him out there with these stupid, this whole personality, this, I don't know, these one-liners, this laid-back attitude where, man, we want to see the ass-kicker Roman Reigns. We don't want to see Kevin Nash 2.0.
Yeah, I mean, we want to see a Roman Reigns that runs down the ramp and spears the shit out of Rusev. but even that was a little heelish. But, yeah, I mean, he reminds me of a John Cena who has Denzel mode and then super passionate mode. And it just – but, you know, par for the course, really. Oh, Greg, you seem to be a person – you know, the antithesis of wrestling hatred – what do you think of Reigns
Roman
being
Reigns
in the mid card? Yeah.
Well, first of all, I don't know what the hell they're doing with Roman Reigns in the sense that I don't know if this is solidifying his trip to the mid card or if this is solidifying an elevation for Rusev and Lana. That's what I'm not 100% certain on right now. I think where they're placed at SummerSlam will have a lot to do with that. But even so, they tend to do these elevations and then demotions on the mid card, and I have a feeling this is an elevation of Rusev that'll probably end in a demotion of Rusev once Reigns goes back and feuds with Rollins again, because that's just what Vince does. Vince McMahon doesn't know how to leave well enough alone, and that's their problem with Roman Reigns. They just overbook and things like that. Now, I got to be honest with you, the mail order bride was a pretty good line by Roman Reigns. I was very, very happy about that. But I need to point out something way more important than all of this, and that's the on-point analysis that you receive from Tony Acero if you read Tony's Raw Report every week at 411mania.com. And you need to go, not only because Tony does the best live recap anywhere, really on the face of the planet, not just on the internet or wherever, because there are places on the planet they don't have internet, but there's still somebody sitting in a shack somewhere or in a tent or in a lean-to recapping Raw, because that's what they do around the world, or at least Vince likes to think so. And Tony's is still the best. I guarantee you Tony's Raw reaction or Raw recap, excuse me, was the only one who analyzed the fact that the color choice of the cake was perfect. And that's the kind of on-point analysis that you won't get anywhere else, because let's be honest, it really was the perfect choice of the color of the cake. It worked well with the dress, and that's the kind of feedback. And it's the little things, and that's where Tony is perfect. You know, just like pointing out how American Pigs is what was going to call Reigns out, even though he's Samoan. And although you brought that up too now, that I'm looking at it. So, again, you know, it's just absolutely perfect. And that's why you've got to read this each and every. In fact, look, you may watch Raw. I don't care if you watch Raw. Still follow along with Tony Acero's Raw recap. In fact, I think it makes it better when you've seen the show and then you get to see what Tony says about the show. That I think that's actually your recap, and this isn't supposed to sound bad, is actually better as being a complimentary piece to Raw. And I think you know that. I think you know that most people read the recap while they're going through Raw, which means they probably do it on their phone. But it's just 100% perfect And I love the analysis, really, of everything, but spot on. Like your high point, if I had to identify one, is this segment of the show.
Yeah, it's partly entertainment, but also it's just my way of digesting the product. But I appreciate that. Thank you.
It's fun, and that's what wrestling's supposed to be. Rusev was kind of like Rusev 0.5 with his look at those cakes line. That wasn't quite take the fish, but it was still very good.
Yeah.
I love, you know, Rusev. I love this Rusev and this Lana. I kind of think that this is the case where I said they can't leave well enough alone with Reigns. I think Reigns should do a lot less than he's doing because of how great Rusev and Lana are. Like, Reigns doesn't need to do much. Let Rusev and Lana do the heavy lifting, and you come out and hit the spear. Had he just come out and hit the spear at American Pigs, that would have been fine. But instead, we had to talk, and it just doesn't make sense. You still could have hit the spear, and still could have had cake thrown at you and everything. So, and very easily could have still pushed Lana into the cake on accident, as you know, with the spear. So, again, just a little bit too much, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah, and you know, Take the Fish is, I believe, Rick's favorite promo of all time. You know, so I'm sure that was a nice little nod for him.
It's good reason.
I just love Rusev. Y'all talked earlier on the show about Owens and Jericho having a lot of free reign on the mic. I think Rusev is another one that they give a lot of free reign on the mic to. You know, when I saw that they had a wedding segment on Raw, I kind of rolled my eyes like, this isn't going to be good wedding segment. But then back of my head said, wait, it's a Rusev wedding segment, though. And I know Rusev is going to get on that mic and say some outrageous things that is just – he's just entertaining. I mean, just look at his Twitter page. I mean, you can see right there how witty and funny he really is.
Yeah, you know, Rusev is the guy who is almost funnier when he's, like, 2 feet away from the microphone. I mean,
yeah.
His aside, his little snark remarks, his little disses to people, to the point where his insults are, like, just so weird. Like, you stupid American pig. Like, what? That doesn't even have anything to do with what you're talking about. But it just, yeah, he's great. He's definitely great.
He understands that by being Bulgarian, what he can get away with. And by having a language barrier, like, he maximizes, I guess, the language barrier. I would love to see – you don't even have to have him face in the ring, even though that would be highly entertaining. I just want to see a Twitter feud between Rusev and Big E. Like, that would really be – that's like the WrestleMania main event of Twitter feuds.
Yes. Yes. The last thing we're going to cover relatively quickly is the growing feud between Sheamus and Cesaro. Now, wrestling alone, this is some badass match making right here. They are brutal, beyond brutal. They are both strong, and Cesaro just looks great every single week. Storyline-wise, I'm not 100% sure. I've seen a lot of complaints online. You have Brian putting that little dagger in there where Cesaro is being completely underutilized. But, you know, I'm more of a type of person that, you know, I've always said, and I will still stand by this to this day, that you can make someone a champion in 2 weeks, okay? And I'm talking anyone from Dolph Ziggler to Santino to Cesaro. So it's not like it's irreparable. I don't even believe that Dolph Ziggler is irreparable. I don't believe that he's been booked so badly that we'll never believe him as champion. You give him the belt and you book him the right way, you have a champion. So I look at Cesaro and I look at the complaints of people saying he's not. This is a mid-card purgatory. He's never going to rise out of it. Why is he with Sheamus? Blah, 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 blah. And I have to disagree because he's putting on great matches every week. And bar an injury, he's going to eventually be at the top. That's what I think. So tonight you had the Sheamus versus Cesaro in a rematch where apparently Foley just wanted to see it again. And then Foley was kind of arm-twisted into giving him a title shot. Now, I didn't like that. I didn't like that he wrestled 2 matches to gain a title shot just to have it rushed at the end of Raw. Because, I mean, yes, we're supposed to remove the fact that we know when Raw ends. But when you saw a match being made, you kind of thought, all right, well, this is going to be fucked up.
And does that mean that his title shot is gone? Does that mean that he doesn't get one again? So it's kind of like, eh, that probably wasn't the best utilization of that storyline. But at the same time, it goes with, if you're not going to do this with Cesaro, what else are you going to do? Because he's not going to be in the main event right now. That's not the story that they're trying to tell. So why not give him something compelling, and why not see matches where Sheamus is going to have 20 bruises tomorrow?
Well, and for me, I mean, you know, I'm the biggest Cesaro fan out there. It's interesting, though, because I'm stuck between either they know exactly what they're doing with Cesaro and Sheamus, and the story just isn't clicking the way they want it to, or they know nothing of what they're doing with Cesaro and Sheamus, but they're so talented they'll throw them out there. Cesaro is, bar none, my favorite in-ring performer on the roster today. But I've always been a Sheamus fan, even when nobody else was. I called his title win back in 2010 when he beat John Cena in the tables match. I was like, they're going to do this, and they're going to push this guy. And it had ups and downs, obviously, and his reign was short-lived. But Sheamus is kind of that, you know, and people don't get the comparison wrong. I'm not saying he is this person in the ring, but they utilize him much in the way they used like a Mr. Perfect back in the day. It's like, don't know who to put in here, insert Mr. Perfect. Now it's insert Sheamus. And that's what they do, and insert Sheamus usually works. I mean, hell, they inserted Sheamus at the world title level back, you know, back in November and December of last year. And in my opinion, that worked. And Reigns got cheered, and Reigns was a hero in Philadelphia of all places. You know, obviously they fumbled the ball on that one in the long run. But to me, you know, I look at it just literally at the surface level. I get to see Cesaro wrestle twice. I get to see Cesaro versus Sheamus and Cesaro versus Rusev, because Cesaro versus Big Bruisers is outstanding wrestling, in my opinion. You know, again, maybe Big E's my favorite performer, because I'm about to say I want to see Cesaro versus Big E. I don't know. But it's, if you don't know what else to do with Cesaro, at least you're putting him in the ring as much as possible, because that's where he excels. I think it's going somewhere. I don't know where it's going, but look, you've got Finn Balor in one SummerSlam main event and Dolph Ziggler in the other. It's not out of the realm of possibility for Cesaro to do something major in the next 12 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I want to point out that slide as a dodge of the brogue kick. That's the thing that Cesaro does. That it's just, that's so fucking simple. The Usos do it all the time after the whip, but Cesaro does it, and you're like, yes, yes, I love you, man. Come here. I need to hug you. Like, it's just awesome. Rick, do you think they're going somewhere? Do you think they know where they're going? Of course they're going somewhere.
I don't think they know where they're going. I had to scratch my head at the booking of this match. I mean, to me, it's like the finish here and the finish from last week should have been reversed, because last week Cesaro beat Sheamus cleanly with no shenanigans involved, and he was told by our face general manager, Mick Foley, who's supposed to be a good guy, who should be fair, that he needed to beat Sheamus and beat him with, what was the word they used? Physically dominant way. Okay, I don't know how much more physically dominant you can win a match by pinning someone 1-2-3 in the ring. It was pretty straightforward that he beat Sheamus last week, and then this week, the ending was kind of a screwy ending with a ref bump and kind of distraction roll up pin, and it was just, you know, it seems like the two finishes should have been reversed if that was the plan that they were going with. Like, so obviously they don't know what they're really doing. But as far as the match itself, this was my favorite match of the night. This Sheamus Cesaro match, it was hard hitting and it was a lot of fun to watch. Till we got to that kind of weird ending there.
Yeah, you know, if they're smart, which, I mean, they're proving to smarten up, but they're not proven to be smart, then they can use this as a let me put it to you this way. You know, I'm the oldest of six siblings, and there's often times where I just forget that one asked me to do something, unless, of course, she's my favorite, in which she gets whatever she wants. But yeah, they'll ask me something. I'm like, yeah, I'll do that for you. Don't worry. And then I don't do it. Likewise, Rick, with, you know, you got some kids there, you know, you got love for both of them, but there's going to be a time where you're just like, oh shit, forgot such and such with something, you know? And if they were smart, they would make it look like Foley is not necessarily in over his head, but also the reality of having a roster of a bunch of people that you have to pay attention to and give, you know, clout to and give reasons to be on your show. And then you have someone coming over and saying, hey, you're not paying enough attention to this guy. And then Foley will be like, well, fuck, they might be right. Let me give him a title shot. Okay, here's your title shot. Like that makes the whole Raw versus SmackDown thing very, very interesting. And I'm not saying that that's what they did, but I am saying that that's what they could do with the little mishaps. Like you said, you thought Foley was supposed to be a face and do the right thing and blah, blah, blah. Well, we don't necessarily know that yet. We don't know what Foley's going to be. We think he is. We assume that's the route they're going. But, I mean, this is what I mean by their ability, hopefully, to use the little things that they're doing and create bigger storylines that intertwine with everything. This isn't just Cesaro and Sheamus. This is Raw versus SmackDown. This is Foley versus Bryan. This is Bryan wanting Cesaro when he crumbled up the paper and got pissed off. That's what this is, or it could be, at least. And, you know, I don't want to give them too much credit, but I'm saying, hey, anyone in WWE, if you're listening, look at what you got, all right?
You know, you bring up an interesting point, and as I'm listening to it, in my head I'm like, this is great, this would be a good idea, this would be a good idea. And this might end pissing people off, but can the fan base get that? Like what you just described, and the things where Foley is forgetting to book Sheamus or Cesaro, and so just kind of does it, and everything you describe, which is perfectly on point, like, do you think they have enough faith in the fan base to even follow that story? I'm not even sure, and this is where I feel bad, but not really. I'm not even sure I have faith in the fan base to follow the story you just described.
Yeah, probably not. But then again, I mean, that's how you train them. That's what
True.
You do is you show them not, you know, oh, I believe you could follow this, but this is what you're going to have to do in order to watch this show, whether you're 5 or 15. I mean, yeah, when you're 15 and you're watching Breaking Bad, you're not going to pick up on the nuances of, you know, familial strife and a kid who has a handicap, but you get the overall arc of it. You get the premise that this kid isn't normal and that there's issues within the family, and it's all because of drugs, you know? Well, similar to Raw, you know, you can get how do you think people, young and old, like the movies like Shrek? You got penis jokes in there.
Mm-hmm.
You got things galore. It hits the point for a 5-year-old and a 50-year-old. It's all it is good writing, and that's what Raw and SmackDown need. And honestly, I'm not going to say they're there, but I feel like they're better than they were 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I can agree with that. This is the same show where when Rusev and Lana showed up in the ring with a cake, everyone knew what was going to happen with that cake.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, everyone.
But like
so
you said, it's all levels. It's all levels. Makes sense.
Levels, yes. And you know, whether you have that really smart wrestling fan who is like, this is the type of people that I run into here in California. Oh, man, did you see what they did to John Cena? Or, oh, man, you know, the storyline's really progressing. I really like the way it's going. Now, I'd say about 8 times out of 10, it's the John Cena thing. But when I find those two people, oh, it's so good to talk. Speaking of talking, let's move on to the Cajun Corner where Rick gets his own little spotlight. And usually he picks topics, Greg, that you
mm-hmm.
either forget you saw on Raw or you're just like, huh, maybe we should talk about that.
Now I have to ask
a
question since I'm not up on some of these things. Is there music for this for Rick? Is there something
Rick
that I can play?
Rick does not have music for the Cajun Corner, but it's called the Cajun
what?
Corner. So if you have, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
We have no music for Raw reaction. Unless Greg
there's no there's no music. Well, I'm just going to pick one for you that that would just make a lot of people happy. That's all I'm going to do. I'm just going to pick one that this doesn't even apply to you, but I don't care. It's my second favorite thing I ever made.
I am perfection.
Steve Cook.
Perfection. I am perfection.
I'm happy.
Well, thanks for going out of your way to make sure I knew it didn't apply to me, though.
Yeah, the Steve Cook part might have given it away, but if Steve Cook were listening, he'd be going crazy right now.
All right.
Cajun Corner, for like Tony tried set it up, is usually deals with the with some of the people on the lower card, the smaller things that you might have passed up. And this week, I wanted to talk about the primetime players, and more importantly, Darren Young, making Darren Young great again. You know, since he started these vigilantes and these promos with Crazy Bob Backlund, I actually had hope that they're going to bring him back and actually do something with him. I was really looking forward to seeing Darren Young put that crossface chicken wing on people and actually, you know, get somewhat of a winning streak going. But that's not the route they took with him. It seems like the make Darren Young great again has took more of a ironic route where he's not great at all. And when he does win matches, it's usually by some kind of fluke or some kind of accident. And the one time we saw him do the crossface chicken wing was in that debacle of a finish against The Miz at Battleground. I think they're really missing the boat with the whole make Darren Young great again and his partnership with Bob Backlund. One of the things I liked about him putting the crossface chicken wing on The Miz was just the way he stared at his hands and that kind of crazy trance that Bob Backlund was known for. And I wanted to see more of that and come out and more of the progression of that storyline. But instead we get a ongoing rivalry with his former partner, Titus O'Neil, in the Primetime Players. And last week we didn't have a show, so we didn't get to talk about it. But last week we saw Titus hold the tights to defeat Darren Young. And this week it was just a tit for tat where Darren Young does the same to win. And honestly, I don't see this really elevating anybody in this storyline. And I know, I don't want to just write it off just yet. I usually like to wait for things to marinate and see where they go. But I think the Darren Young great again ship has sailed for me, and I do not see him in the near future being great at all.
Well, I mean, to make something great again, it first has to be great. That goes to, Bob Backlund and Donald Trump. But the idea is that I'm not even sure where we're going with this guy. And then you put him against Titus, who I believe they tried this at one point and it didn't work out. If there's one thing I could take from it, Titus has shown some flair. Last week when he yelled at Backlund, and this week when he basically like beat down Darren Young in the ring. But aside from that, yeah, not all that entertaining. It's the part of the show where it's just like, all right, well, they're trying. I mean, at least better than the Shining Stars.
Yeah, that's true. It is better than Shining Stars. I'm going to give it till about March before the Primetime Players are a tag team again. It's they've already done it before. They'll Titus will disappear. Darren will get attacked. Out will come Titus. It's just in my opinion, they have no direction whatsoever for either of these guys, and that's why they're just throwing him in there against each other. Because if they had a direction, this feud would mean more. Because I don't see them even getting a SummerSlam a SummerSlam match. They won't even get the pre-show for SummerSlam, in my opinion.
And the thing about it is, I'm not even looking forward to a potential match between these two. It's something that, if they don't make the card, I'm actually probably going to be happier that it didn't.
Yeah, it's they're better off as a tag team. They were a good tag team. I was entertained by Primetime Players. I was, millions of dollars. I was happy when they were teaming up. I made sound bites about them teaming up. I mean, exactly how happy I was with those guys teaming up. I mean, come on.
Anybody got time for that?
Like, that is something that Tony's heard a million times.
Y'all wouldn't know entertainment if it flushed you in the place.
But we would know something is not entertaining, and this is not entertaining.
Yeah, it sucks. It sucks because, I mean, there's a lot of potential when you think and you realize it's Bob Backlund screaming and it's Darren Young
I mean, there is potential there. But I think that whether it's miscommunication on Young's part to the writing team or the writing team looking at this as one of the lower level, you know, if stories were a totem pole, this would be the ground that everything was planted on. It doesn't matter. No one cares what's at the bottom. And, you know, they don't care to see it go up higher either.
I think they really dropped the boat with Darren Young after Battleground. He had that match against The Miz. The ending to that match was ridiculous because it warranted some type of conclusion that it could never get because they're on two different brands. And the only good thing that came out of it for me was Darren Young going into the chicken wing trance. I mean, him staring at his hands after putting Miz in that chicken wing made me say, oh, my God, like, this might be something good. This might be – something might come out of this where Darren Young kind of loses it the way Bob Backlund has. And they've shown where he loses it. You know, he kind of has a really overprotective side to him when people are confronting Bob Backlund. But maybe that's where they need to go with it. And maybe that's what we're going to see more of is just Darren Young going batshit crazy. And I would like to see that. Make Darren Young crazy again.
Yeah, maybe. For our last talking point, I guess. Well, I'm going to make it relatively short because there's really not much to say. I could summarize it in maybe 3 to 4 points. Sasha Banks is gorgeous. Dana Brooke still sucks as a wrestler. And Charlotte missed the right hook. That's pretty much all you need to know with regards to tonight. They're progressing the storyline, so we now know that Dana Brooke will not be ringside at SummerSlam, which means my personal hope is that they get to have a lengthy match at SummerSlam and just as good, if not better, of the Raw match that they had with slightly less risks taken. I mean, I appreciate it, but I don't want to see Sasha Banks pull Alita, and I don't want to see Charlotte bust a boob.
I mean, yeah, you don't think those things are real, Tony? Like, come on.
Well, no, I don't.
I agree with you.
Oh. Yeah, Rick, did you have anything to say about the ladies?
Man, that Charlotte slap was horrible, though. Like, she was supposed to be aiming for Sasha, and it was supposed to be like a miscommunication where she hit Dana. And I don't know who mistimed everything, but it just is like Sasha like slow motion slapped her partner there, and it was supposed to be an accident.
That was just bad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have the match to look forward to, and Dana Brooke won't be there, so I'm pretty excited. All right. Now, I usually have a segment called The Do, which is a horrible name, but it's based off of my extreme love for Mountain Dew. And I usually crack a can open and talk about something ad nauseum to the point where people either perk up their ears or hang up the phone. No one hangs up. I'm kidding. But as a teaser for next week's show, the Do this week is actually called Genuine Draft on Tap. That's my play on words, and it's really awesome, and no one could tell me otherwise. I will speak about that next week and also might write a little ditty about it. But in terms of the Raw reaction tonight, we are at the end of our show where we talk about what we liked, didn't like, who our MVP was, and give the show a rating. So since Greg is our guest co-host, I'm going to start with him and basically just answer the question. What was your least favorite match or moment of tonight's show?
My least favorite moment of tonight's show, I think I could do without the women's situation. The whole Sasha Banks, you know, match with Dana, like you said, Dana's not improving. Charlotte, it just for something that's been great, it did not click with me tonight. And I'm despite some other things that could have sat in this role, I would have been good without that.
Okay, your most favorite part or match of the show?
Honestly, my favorite part of the show was the Randy Orton Brock Lesnar video package. I just and it was the little things done by Brock Lesnar that made it for me. So I'm 100% on board, thanks to the comments by Brock Lesnar.
All right. Your MVP of the show?
My MVP of the show would have to be Cesaro, working two matches, delivering in both of those matches. Yes, I'm a little partial to Cesaro, but I'm going to go Cesaro with an honorable mention to Rusev.
Nice. And your overall rating?
11 DB. You know I hate ratings. I'll go with 14. 14 out of, I don't know.
14 out of 7 triangles. Beautiful. Okay.
There you go.
No, really. No, in all honesty, thanks for co-hosting, Greg. You came in clutch pretty much. Not to say that Rick and I couldn't handle it, but, you know, I feel that I'm really good with a 3-man group, at least much better than Cole and JBL and anyone else that sits next to them. So, yeah, it was a pleasure having you. Now, Rick, my man.
Yeah.
What was your least favorite part of the show?
You know what? My least favorite part of the show we didn't really talk about. We touched on Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson's their debut of their personality, and that was a great aspect of seeing them on Raw with showing some kind of comedy and a personality. But the match itself between Luke Gallows and Kofi Kingston, man, that was a bad match. I didn't like the way it ended, kind of abruptly. I don't like that finisher that ended the match. You know, it was something that we really not used to. I mean, we know Gallows does that two-handed chokeslam usually to finish his matches off. So it's just kind of odd that it ended that way. And it wasn't a good match. It was a short match. It was a short match that ended with one move on Kofi Kingston, and I think one half of the tag team champions should have fared better than getting pinned by one move.
Yeah, it was weird. I thought it was maybe forced because of the timing. I think the last 45 minutes of Raw were timed awkwardly, and that's what happens when, you know, they don't realize, you know, certain things. But I get your point. What was your most favorite part or match of the show?
Man, Cesaro, Sheamus, I had mentioned that earlier. That was my favorite match of the night. Cesaro had two good matches tonight, and in my eyes, it was the only two good matches of Raw. I mean, there's some other good stuff, but yeah, Cesaro, Sheamus match.
Okay, and your MVP?
I have to go with Cesaro easily. I mean, two good matches, and focal point of the show. I liked it.
Nice. Okay, what was your overall rating?
All right, rating. Well, Greg, we do ratings from 1 to 10. So if you're giving it a 14 minute, you like really like this Raw.
Who's this wee stuff? I don't give ratings from 1 to 10. You guys might give ratings from 1 to 10. I hate ratings more than life itself.
Well, I'm giving this one a 6, a little bit above average. I think it's down from the last 2 weeks, which are two really good shows, which I'm upset that we weren't able to be on air to talk about those two good shows. And we, as usual, we come back on air after a mediocre role.
Yeah.
All right.
All
Tony,
right.
You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Switch it up. I'll ask you, what was your least favorite moment of tonight's episode of Raw?
My least favorite moment is kind of inconsequential to the whole show, to the point where I didn't even mention it once in the format or the show itself, but I will now only because I found it extremely pointless, even from an advertising perspective. But P. Diddy, Puff Daddy, Sean Diddy Combs, whatever name he's going by right now, has no place on the show whatsoever. And I mean, this goes back to guest hosts in general, but I mean, it was harmless. Nothing really happened bad, but you know, all black people seem to know each other. So, he hung out with New Day and it was really pointless. And it's probably my least favorite part of the show.
I was actually surprised and glad that they had a major celebrity like P. Diddy and only used him for that one small little segment. So I was happy that they didn't use him for anything bigger.
Yeah, well, him listing off names that haven't been relevant since the 90s didn't help his case either.
So what was your favorite moment of tonight's episode of Raw?
I'm going to have to agree with everyone with regards to Cesaro and Sheamus, or just Cesaro in general. This is another reason why I feel like he's going to be just fine. Like, you guys need to not worry, because tonight, what any wrestling fan is going to be talking about is going to be Cesaro.
That's a good segue to your MVP, I take.
Yeah, my MVP is Sasha Banks. No, I'm just kidding. Cesaro, for sure.
You should see the Knights when he names himself the MVP.
I learned it from Greg.
Yeah, it sounds like something I would do.
What was your overall star rating?
I'm going to go towards, like, 7, you know? I mean, it wasn't a bad show. It could have been better, but, I mean, that's, you know, that's anyone could say it could have been better. I mean, you could say that after Sex, and, you know, just it is what it is. So I don't know. I think that tonight a lot of people are going to complain. I just read Larry's little review on 411, and even he had some complaints that I was just like, I thought it was fine. I mean, I like ball jokes, but so I wasn't as offended as during certain segments as Larry was. But that, I mean, again, we're not the same person, not nearly. So 7 out of 10.
It wasn't New Japan or Evolve, so it were Chikara.
Oh,
so Larry's not going to be
that's
happy.
True. Yeah. So that's the end of the Raw reaction featuring Greg DeMarco. We will be back next week with another co-host of mine, well, I guess of ours. And, you know, I got two people in mind, so I'm going to flip a coin and see what happens. But either way, it'll be entertaining.
I know what you're thinking, Tony. I know what you're thinking. And you, for your hope, for your sake, I hope she says yes.
You're welcome!
If I flip a coin and it lands on head, then I think we're good.
Well, if it lands on tail, you're probably good, too.
Yeah, you make a good point. All right, for Greg DeMarco and Rick Bay, this is the Raw Reaction. I am out this bitch. Deuces, bitches.
Au revoir.
It's a show.